You are listening to Ellie on an Island, Episode 1, Book Review, The Midnight Library. Hi everyone, welcome to this podcast. My name is Ellie. I'm an aspiring writer based in Montreal. It's currently in the minus 20s. If you live in warmer temperatures, I live vicariously through you. In this episode, we're going to talk about the book, The Midnight Library. I hope you'll enjoy listening to this and decide to read the book yourself. Have you ever blamed yourself for a decision you made in the past and find yourself not able to forgive yourself and move on, always thinking so highly of that life you could have had? But what if you could actually live that life? Do you think you'd be absolutely happy then? This is the main idea of the book, The Midnight Library. The Midnight Library is written by Matt Haig and was published by HarperCollins Publishers in 2020. It falls into the category of science fiction and fantasy. I listened to it twice on Audible from Amazon. It's not part of the Plus catalog. I had to use my one monthly credit to purchase it. It was 8 hours, 49 minutes long, and was narrated by Carrie Mulligan. She does a wonderful job of narrating it, by the way. Before we dive into the book, I'd like to mention a trigger warning. This book deals with mental health issues, namely situational depression and suicide. I'd like you to be aware of that, so you can make an informed decision about whether to read it or listen to this podcast. The protagonist of The Midnight Library is Nora Seitz. She's currently 35 years old, single, has a degree in philosophy, has a job at a store called String Theory that sells musical instruments. She lives in Bedford, Bedfordshire. Bedford is located 60 miles north of London. She also has depression and is currently on medication for it. She deeply regrets her past decisions. For example, that she disappointed her father by not becoming an Olympian despite being a competitive swimmer. She regrets letting her brother down by not agreeing to sign a contract as a band with him and his friend Ravi with Universal. She was the songwriter and they weren't ready to take the band without her. Her parents have both passed away. Her brother Joe and her are not as close as she'd like them to be. Nora is informed her brother is suffering from depression as well. I'm going to read that part. It's heartbreaking. I think he's depressed. Nora's mind grew heavier at the idea her brother might feel like she did. In the beginning, you catch a glimpse into her life. Her cat dies. She gets fired from her job. It's raining, which she's not fond of. She runs into Ravi, who blames her for money problems since she's the one who didn't agree to sign the contract for the band. Someone from school recognizes her and asks if she made it to the Olympics. She's facing financial challenges. Her elderly neighbor, Mr. Banerjee, whose medication she usually picked up from the drugstore, says she doesn't need to do that anymore since someone else has now taken on that task. And she loses the one student she teaches music to. She feels superfluous, as if no one needs her. Ultimately, she sadly decides to take her own life. Between life and death, she finds herself in a library with one other person in it, Mrs. Elm, her school librarian. Nora and Mrs. Elm used to play chess together, and she's the person who informed her of her father's death and showed kindness to her and held her hand that day. The book actually opens with this section and then jumps into current day. Now back to the library. This library is filled with books. Books that each contain a life she could have had had she made different decisions in the past. She enters those books, or lives if you may, and sees for herself what happens. There are certain rules and regulations to this library, one of which is that the moment she starts feeling the said life is disappointing as well, she's going to return and she can never re-enter a life she's already experienced. Death in any life is her real death. There is a book in the library titled The Book of Regrets, which contains all of Nora's regrets. She reads that book first. And it's so moving to see how harsh and unforgiving someone can be to himself or herself. I think so many people deal with this issue. Nora's pain and contrition for certain decisions made in the past and not forgiving herself worsens her current state. So she keeps going into these lives, essentially seeing how things went, getting disappointed, returning to the library, and with the help of Mrs. Elm, entering a new life. In one life, she's the gold medalist Olympian, but her struggles with her father are the same. He's still not proud of her. And she learns that her father is like that, and it had nothing to do with her becoming an Olympian or not. He just didn't show or have the unconditional love a parent should have for a child. She realizes she might as well just focus on herself and making herself happy, instead of unsuccessfully trying to win the love of her father and later on, other people. My favorite part of the book was the life of a glaciologist. She's a glaciologist, part of the International Polar Research Institute, currently on a boat exploring the Svalbard archipelago. They're determining the speed at which the ice and glaciers have been melting in the region to gauge the acceleration rate of climate change. Yet, she doesn't understand terms such as striated basalt bedrock or post-glacial isotopes. One day, she's chosen to be the spotter. The spotter is the researcher who stays and looks out for bears. If a bear shows up, the steps she has to follow are like so. Fire a flare, bang a ladle on a saucepan like crazy since bears have sensitive ears, and the sound will scare them away. And if that still doesn't work, she is to shoot the bear with her Winchester rifle. At first, nothing happens. First a walrus shows up, and then a polar bear. This bear encounter terrifies Nora. As said in the book, in the face of death, life is more attractive. Contrary to what she thinks, she doesn't want to die. She shockingly wants to live. Since she's not disappointed, she doesn't return to the library. The rifle is too far away from her to reach. She fires the flare and bangs the saucepan with the ladle. The banging scares the bear away, and to her surprise, she realizes not only does she want to live, she also wants to do something good with her life. I personally once had a bear encounter here in Canada. It was with a black bear, and it was a strange experience. It was the first time I was seeing a wild animal in a place other than the zoo or a safari park, and it was both terrifying and meaningful. I can see how the bear encounter made Nora develop a new appreciation for life. At the end of their expedition, they return to dry land. Longyearbyen is the town closest to Svalbard, and it's the world's northernmost town. Here, a French colleague of hers, Hugo, reveals he knows her little secret. He's a slider too, experiencing different lives between life and death. Their encounter ultimately disappoints Nora, and she returns to the library. In an important chapter titled Permafrost in the audiobook, the author talks about Nora's background, about her grandparents and her parents. Here, the underlying reasons and conditions that have led to Nora's depression are explained. It's a combination of genetics and the attitude of her parents toward life, along with the blandness of her life. As beautifully put in the book, a baton of failure was passed on to Nora, and she had faithfully held on to it for a long time. For example, her mother's lack of warmth is illustrated here. It was over an hour before Nora's mother came to pick her up, her brother stoned and numb in the back seat, and Nora had sat in the front next to her mute, trembling mother, saying that she loved her, but hearing nothing back. To add more meaning to the story, this book is dedicated to health workers and care workers. Not everyone is blessed with loving and supportive family, and in situations like this, especially in early years, the importance of the care worker becomes more evident. There is a mention of immigration, which is a theme I'm interested in. What a strange and admirable thing it is to be an immigrant. Nora's own grandfather had immigrated from Puglia, Italy, to England. Puglia is located on the heel of the boot of Italy. He'd exchanged life on the Adriatic Sea for a job at the London Brick Company. In his naivety, her grandfather had imagined a wonderful life. However, the London Brick Company, despite its name, was not located in London. It was based in Bedford, and her grandfather had made his peace with that and accepted disappointment as the reality of life. I noticed three things about this paragraph. One, that the grandfather is, in a subtle way, a hero for his braveness, his willingness to leave home and settle down somewhere else. Two, how Nora had never thought of doing something like that herself, and that had led to blandness in her life. Three, the difference between expectations and the reality of life. It's the expectation of what life should look like that messes us up. Some of her other lives that were appealing to me are these ones. In one life, she taught English at the College of Montparnasse in Paris. She cycled by the Seine and read lots of books on park benches. That's such a beautiful description. It reminds me of scenes in Emily in Paris. In another life, she had kept up swimming but never tried to pursue the Olympics. She did it for fun. In that life, she was a lifeguard on a beach resort of Sitges near Barcelona and was fluent both in Catalan and Spanish. I loved this description. The sea, the sky, the water. That was beautiful. In one life, she was a published author. Her novel, The Shape of Regret, was shortlisted for a major literary award. She had lunch in a disappointingly banal Soho members club with two affable, easygoing producers who wanted to option it for a film. This part resonated with me since I'm an aspiring writer myself. In one life, she went to Oxford and became a lecturer in philosophy at St. Catherine's College, and lived by herself in a fine Georgian townhouse in a genteel row, amid an environment of respectable calm. There's also a mention of Montreal, the city I live in. In one life, she teaches piano in Montreal. I know music teachers in Montreal, and to think of them as one of the ideal lives of Nora was quite lovely. She met Hugo again in another life, diving off the Corsican coast. Corsica is an island on the Mediterranean Sea and one of 18 regions of France. The Corsican coast was in line with the many places the author mentions. The disappearance of Hugo was comical. Eventually, it dawns on Nora that her own life, the one she hated and she ended, was a life worth living, that she was impacting the lives of certain people in a positive way. She grows in appreciation for life and a desire to live after death. Matt Haig has done a wonderful job in this book. He is so knowledgeable. You can see how much he knows about different places, about the role of social media and its implications on our life, and the hazardous trap of comparing your real life to the highly curated images of other people's lives. He also mentions many philosophers. This one by David Thoreau was my favorite. Go confidently in the direction of your dreams. Live the life you've imagined. I also like the plants he mentioned. The yucca plant, the cacti, foxgloves, irises. Something I wasn't expecting was the description of some of the places Nora visits to be that real. When she experiences the life as a glaciologist, when she's on that boat visiting the Svalbard archipelago near Norway, that part was done so masterfully, I felt like I was there, and I had made that trip myself. Something I appreciated about Matt Haig's writing style was the short description of appearances. It's usual to read detailed descriptions of a character's hair, face, body, and whatnot, and I'm not the biggest fan of this. Of course, I'd like to know the age of the characters and a little bit of information about the way they're dressed, but when a writer gets carried away with that, I get slightly uncomfortable. It diminishes the humanity of the characters, if you know what I mean. The only description in this book is the mention of dark hair, which points to the Italian roots of Nora and Joe, and the different length of Nora's hair in different lives. I can't confidently say this was intentional, although he does mention Nora's mother was always trying to fix perceived flaws in Nora's body and face, but I find this respectful, especially at this day and age. Let me know if you feel the same. One thing I believe the author could have touched on is forgiving yourself for wrong decisions you made when you were at a down point in your life. You have to remind yourself that you make decisions in the situation you're in, with the level of support you have. Once that situation goes away or those undesirable conditions go away, it's easy to be judgmental towards yourself. Even you might not believe why you made a decision because you've forgotten how it felt like to be in that place. I won't reveal the ending. I'm not going to take the excitement and suspense away. I can easily see this book turned into a movie, and I respect Matt Haig so much for touching on the sensitive issue of mental health. I'll end this podcast with these quotes from the book. 1. In the face of death, life seemed more attractive, and as life seemed more attractive, how could she get back to the Midnight Library? 2. If one advances confidently, Thoreau had written in Walden, in the direction of his dreams, and endeavors to live the life which he has imagined, he will meet with a success unexpected in common hours. He'd also observe that part of this success was the product of being alone, I never found the companion that was so companionable as solitude. 3. In one life, she spent all day arguing with people she didn't know on Twitter and ended a fair proportion of her tweets by saying, "Do better," while secretly realizing she was telling herself to do that. 4. In some lives, she smashed through the glass ceiling, and in some, she just polished it. 5. We only know what we perceive. Everything we experience is ultimately just our perception of it. It's not what you look at that matters, it's what you see. So thank you very much for joining me. That was today's episode. Please subscribe and also follow me on my Instagram account, Ellie on an Island. I will talk to you in my next episode. Bye.